Chapter 10, To Be or Not to Be, an International Anti-Corruption Court. It is necessary to post a disclaimer at the start of this chapter. The NGO which promotes the idea of establishing an International Anti-Corruption Court, or IACC, is called Integrity Initiatives International and is based in Boston. Both Justice Richard Goldstone, a trustee of Accountability Now, and the author are on the board of III. We are accordingly firmly in the camp that favours the creation of the IACC as a companion institution to the International Criminal Court, or ICC. The Konrad Adenauer Stiftung remains sceptical about the chances of creating the political will to set up a viable international anti-corruption court. That will was mustered for the ICC, which was formed pursuant to the adoption of the Rome Statute, which has been in force since 2002. The ICC has international jurisdiction on the basis of the doctrine of complementarity over crimes against humanity, war crimes, aggression, and genocide. Its structure, statute, and style of operation could easily be used and adapted as a superb precedent for the statute creating the International Anti-Corruption Court. The workings of the ICC have recently been reviewed. The lessons to be learned from that review can obviously be used to get the IACC up and going in a manner that seeks to avoid some of the pitfalls that may have been part of the history of the ICC. As the mandate of the ICC is so very different to that of the proposed IACC, it is not thought prudent or even expedient to expand the jurisdiction of the ICC to encompass the crimes involved in grand corruption. The burning question is whether the necessary political appetite for the establishment of the IACC can be generated in a world in which the achievement of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals seems ever more remote as the coronavirus pandemic sweeps the world in a way that is likely to be history-changing. The leadership of III was quick to point out that the pandemic would lead to a feeding frenzy on the part of the corrupt in high places, and that impunity is the likely outcome of the frenzy. Writing in the Boston Globe, Judges Wolfe, the founder of III, and Goldstone point out, "Very little is certain about the coronavirus, and we are only judges, not prophets. However, we can confidently predict that the response to the pandemic will be a bonanza for kleptocrats, an opportunity for the corrupt leaders of many countries to further enrich themselves. Governments are poised to provide trillions of dollars to counter the pandemic without even the usual, often ineffective safeguards to assure that the funds are properly spent. The coronavirus will, therefore, provide additional compelling proof that the world needs an international anti-corruption court to punish and deter kleptocrats who enjoy impunity in the countries they rule. Corruption has devastating consequences for human health. As the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights said in 2013, corruption kills. The amount of money stolen through corruption is enough to feed the world's hungry 80 times over. Corruption denies them their right to food and, in some cases, their right to life." After recounting the history of malfeasance around previous health crises, they continue, "Grand corruption does not flourish because of a lack of laws. There are 187 nations party to the United Nations Convention Against Corruption. Almost all of them have laws prohibiting extortion, bribery, money laundering, and misappropriation of national resources. They also have an international obligation to enforce those laws against their corrupt leaders. However, kleptocrats enjoy impunity in their own countries because they control the administration of justice. They will not permit the prosecution and punishment of their collaborators and themselves. Therefore, an IACC is essential to serve as a court of last resort, providing a forum for enforcing existing national laws or new uniform international counterparts against kleptocrats. The IACC would be staffed by expert investigators and receive evidence from private companies that are often employed to trace illicit assets. It would employ prosecutors experienced in developing and presenting international cases and judges with the demonstrated ability to preside in complex criminal proceedings. In addition to incarcerating kleptocrats, it would recover the ill-gotten gains laundered in countries that join the IACC. The IACC would operate on the principle of complementarity. This means that the IACC would exercise its authority to prosecute only if a country is found to be unable or unwilling to prosecute its leaders itself. In essence, the IACC would assure that there is a court in which kleptocrats will be punished. Imprisonment of corrupt leaders will create opportunities for them to be replaced by honest officials who are dedicated to serving their citizens. It will also deter other kleptocrats tempted by greed to commit crimes of corruption. One of former Angolan President Dos Santos's last acts before leaving office was to give immunity from prosecution to his family and himself, demonstrating that kleptocrats fear being punished and therefore are capable of being deterred. The proposed International Anti-Corruption Court is gaining support at an accelerating rate. Colombia and Peru are leading a campaign to have the United Nations commit to creating the court at a 2021 special session on corruption. Other supporters include a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, members of the U.S. Congress, leading non-governmental organizations, and courageous young people whose indignation at grand corruption has ousted kleptocrats in Ukraine and other countries. It is unfortunate that the IACC does not yet exist to deter kleptocrats from profiting from the coronavirus pandemic. When their crimes are eventually discovered, their impunity will prove to be intolerable and unsustainable. There is therefore reason to hope that one of the few positive things to emerge from the pandemic will be the creation of the International Anti-Corruption Court. It was not the III leadership which first introduced the notion of an International Anti-Corruption Court to the conference goers whose deliberations provide the inspiration for this book. At the Johannesburg Conference, which ended on the 24th of November 2016, Mary Jane Kube was then serving as the Executive Director of Transparency International Zimbabwe. She first spoke of the need for an International Anti-Corruption Court by relating a tale from Uganda in the following terms. Untouchables. Come rain, come shine, they're never going to court, not while there's somebody close to them in power. That's because of the politics involved. These are the words of a prosecutor in the Anti-Corruption Court, Uganda, May 21st, 2013. This court is tired of trying tilapias when crocodiles are left swimming.
The observation of Justice Bosco Kawutsi, former head of the Anti-Corruption Court Uganda, during a ruling convicting an engineer during the Commonwealth Health Heads of Government meeting scandal, June the 29th, 2010.
Grand corruption perpetrated by the elite, protected by or involving political actors, needs an international response because it undermines human rights. By unlawfully interfering with resources that should be available to realize fundamental rights such as the right to health, education, food, water, and energy. Grand corruption occurs when politicians and state agents mandated to make or enforce the law in the name of the people are misusing this authority to sustain their power, amass and protect ill-gotten wealth and status.
Whether it is grand corruption through illicit appropriation for private gain or petty corruption that renders access to services costly for ordinary citizens because of bribes, corruption has disastrous consequences on the exercise of fundamental rights. In addition, it breeds impunity that is in direct defiance to the rule of law and accountability because it undermines the very institutions created to eradicate it, such as law enforcement and the judiciary. At the second Entebbe conference, which ended on the 19th of October 2018, Justice Richard Goldstone spoke on the International Anti-Corruption Court. What he said has been adapted by him and edited for this book and has been brought up to date by his thoughts on the impact of the current pandemic on kleptocrats and state capturers busy in the field of grand corruption.
Global anti-corruption initiatives. At the outset, I should state that I am a member of the board of an NGO established in 2016 that is supporting the establishment of a permanent international anti-corruption court. It would have similarities to the International Criminal Court, but be quite separate from it. The NGO is called Integrity Initiatives International. I should also mention that Paul Hoffman, an organizer of this conference in Entebbe, is a member of the International Committee of III. I doubt that any nation is free from corruption. However, what III is concerned about is grand corruption, that is, the abuse of public office for personal gain. It also goes under the name of kleptocracy. Sometimes takes the form of state capture, term of art that vividly describes the effect of rampant grand corruption. In the great majority of cases, those leaders involved in all forms of grand corruption enjoy immunity because they control the police, the prosecutors, and the courts, or at least some of them. In 2016, more than 40 countries met in London for an anti-corruption summit. They endorsed a global declaration against corruption that commits each of them to the proposition that the corrupt should be pursued and punished. The declaration emphasized the centrality of the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, in which 181 countries have pledged to enact laws criminalizing corruption and to enforce them, even against their nation's leaders, implicitly recognizing that existing institutions and efforts have not been adequate, the participating governments committed themselves to exploring innovative solutions to combat corruption.
Judge Mark Wolf, a senior federal judge in Boston, is the chairman and founder of III. In a recent article published in the magazine Daedalus, Judge Wolf said,
"It is estimated that trillions of dollars are paid in bribes annually, and that the cost of all forms of corruption is more than 5% of global GDP. Developing regions lose 10 times more to corruption than they receive in foreign aid. illicit outflows of funds that developing countries desperately need total more than $1 trillion a year. The cost of corruption is not limited to poorer countries. For example, in 2011, Russia had the third largest outflow of illicit capital in the world. Bribery, theft, kickbacks, and corruption had cost the country $427 billion from 2000 to 2008. Much to my regret, my own country, South Africa, in recent years, has suffered grievously from kleptocracy and state capture. That appears to be in the course of being reversed by the new administration of President Ramaphosa. A commission of inquiry into state capture, headed by the Deputy Chief Justice Zondo, has already heard hair-raising evidence on the machinations of the infamous Gupta brothers in collusion with former President Zuma and some members of his administration. Judge Wolf also quotes the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, as saying in 2013 that corruption kills. The money stolen through corruption every year is enough to feed the world's hungry 80 times over. Corruption denies them their right to food, and in some cases, their right to life. Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times reported in 2015 that grand corruption also has fatal consequences in other ways. In Sierra Leone, 1/3 of the funds allocated to combat Ebola in 2014 could not be accounted for, although some of those funds were found in the bank accounts of health officials administering the program. I was staggered by my experiences some 14 years ago with the corruption associated with the United Nations Oil for Food program. That program was set up to maintain the strong sanctions against the regime of Saddam Hussein whilst maintaining minimum standards of health and nutrition for the people of Iraq. The program required that all the proceeds from the sale of Iraqi oil be paid into a bank account controlled by the United Nations. These proceeds could only be used by Iraq to purchase humanitarian goods for its people, and expressly no goods that could be used in the production of weaponry of any kind. The program lasted for 7 years, from 1996 until the United States-led invasion of Iraq in 2003. It involved some $110 billion of sales of Iraqi oil and the purchase with the proceeds of humanitarian goods, all under UN surveillance. It was the largest effort to provide humanitarian relief in the history of the United Nations. Many thousands of people were specially employed to work for the program. Some were based in difficult circumstances in Iraq. Others were employed for a special new UN agency set up within the UN Secretariat in New York. All of this was above the competence of the organization. The managerial weaknesses and lack of discipline were not uncommon within the organization. There were also only two common demands for illicit payments and too many countries turning a blind eye to those practices. As the program ran, so reports and rumors began to emerge of surcharges and kickbacks, that is, bribes. And so too, there were allegations of administrative failures and corruption within the United Nations itself. In the early part of 2004, the then Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, felt obliged to set up a UN inquiry into the allegations. Paul Volcker was chosen to head the inquiry. I was one of the three members of the committee. We made it clear to the Secretary General that it was bound to be an intrusive inquiry and that we would have to have access to all UN sources, including his own. The Secretary-General was in full agreement,
and remained true to his word. In the end, we had a staff of over 70 people from 28 countries around the world.
From the beginning, Saddam Hussein abused the program. By 2000, he had insisted on a secret surcharge of between 10 and 50 cents a barrel. The proceeds went to his account. Then, greater kickbacks were demanded for the purchase of humanitarian goods. Some of these payments were transported to Baghdad in $100 bills. Meticulous records were kept by the Iraqi oil ministry officials, no doubt to save their own lives.
Some 4,500 companies were involved. 2,200 of them paid bribes. The largest bribe was paid by the Australian Wheat Board, $420 million. In return, they received $1.2 billion worth of wheat contracts.
It is in that broad context that the NGO III is promoting the idea of an international anti-corruption court. Like the ICC, it would be governed by complementarity.
If countries investigated corruption in their own states, the court would have no jurisdiction.
It is hoped that the least such a court would achieve is pressure on countries to investigate allegations against their own leaders and so keep them from the court. Let me end this contribution to the conference by stressing that grand corruption is not only a problem on our continent, Africa. It is a worldwide practice, and it is more than time for appropriate action to be taken to contain it. Updating my presentation to the 2018 Entebbe Conference in 2020, I am pleased to report that the issues raised by III have not been stillborn. A debate between the unpersuaded skeptics and those converted to the notion of the establishment of an international anti-corruption court continues, both in the corridors of power and in the halls of academia. The optimum way of keeping up with the developments on this front is to visit the website of III, which is www.integrityinitiatives.org. That was the contribution of Justice Richard Goldstone to the Entebbe Conference in 2018.
He is a former Justice of the Constitutional Court of South Africa.
There is no good argument against bringing an end to the impunity of the powerful, those who enter politics to give vent to their greed. Whether this is done from grassroots level upward by voters who vote for politicians who serve the people rather than enrich themselves, or by international pressure to create the IACC, or indeed by both strategies, it is plain that the world will be a better place if the culture of impunity for kleptocrats is ended. If this can be achieved in individual countries by reforming anti-corruption machinery of state to render its STIRS compliant, in both its structure and its operations, all well and good. If this is a bridge too far, the international community can and should bring pressure to bear on kleptocrats to submit themselves to the jurisdiction of an international anti-corruption court on pain of being excluded from donor funding, World Bank and IMF loans, and the benefits of being a member of the international community of nations in good standing. It ought to be the ambition of every nation to take its rightful place in the community of nations.
The political viability of that ambition is stunted mainly by the attitude of kleptocrats who persist in their corrupt ways.